This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Well, how's your nature session been going? You been having fun? You got a nice walk down into the forest this morning. And, you know, really, it felt like there was absolutely no separation between any of us and the forest. You know, it's when you get into that place where there is no separation whatsoever, then you can hear the actual voice of the Buddha talking to us, directing how we're going to go. And maybe after this Dharma talk, we can go over to Koban Shrine and we can hear the actual voice of the Buddha talking to us. You know, this is the living, awakened state of mind, you know, embodied by Shakyamuni Buddha. And I think if we are able to recognize the sound of the Buddha's voice, that it was something early on in my practice when I was first beginning to sit with Koban Chino. He and I walked in the woods quite a lot together, and he told me things, and I requested that he show me the actual voice of the Buddha. Koban was a mean and playful man, you know, because he refused. He gave me a couple of pointers, but he wouldn't take it on himself. You know, he was saying, you know, you got to do it yourself. But I found it anyway. So this time we are the kind of the theme maybe of this nature session has been about water. And water is kind of like it's almost a universal solvent. If you look at it in terms of that. It goes into everything and it comes out of everything. Rocks have it. Fish have it. We have it. Trees have it. Buildings have it. So it's a very interesting thing to think about water. Water exemplifies the qualities of the living Buddha. Before I really recognized that Koban was my teacher, I sat with Suzuki, and he said something to me that has been helpful to me, especially in marriage and in my relationships with people. You know that nothing that can be said here is, there's nothing which has never been said before, so I'm actually only repeating the words of the Buddhas and ancestors. So this is it's not sour, this is milk. And this is water. And this is I am trying to work with people who have lost contact with their original nature, who have lost contact with the deep water, the deep light of their original nature. And, you know, it doesn't mean just people that we sit. It means, a policeman. It means somebody who has different views than I do. Of course, it means, you know, when you're in a long relationship, like marriage or long friendships, you are going to encounter some bad spots in yourself. You're going to respond to things in other people that are going to set you off. Triggers, I guess they call them nowadays. So this thing that Suzuki did, I was about to go down to Tassajara for the first time for a practice period, and I had Dokusan with him. And he did something similar to what I am doing here. He said, when you go down to Tassajara, that is to say, this is Tassajara, this is a Zen practice place, this is our life, how do we behave? You know, it is especially for, you know, those of us who have received the precepts or who are ordained. But it refers to everybody here, because we're talking about our own original nature. Suzuki said to me, he said, your relations with all of us, all of our relations with one another, because we have been best friends from past lives. This is his saying. You know, so it makes a little bit of a different tone to something when you think about, you know, like you and me, we have been best friends in past lives. We have been best friends in past lives. You know, we look around and we see each one of us. We have been best friends in past lives. All these different zigzags going back and forth. You know, this is an interesting take. Suzuki was a very, you know, are you familiar with his name? You know, he was kind of a famous guy. You know, and you can even talk to people who aren't acquainted with Buddhism very much, and they know about that. I was walking along the street in Palo Alto the other day, and I went past this place where I used to live off El Camino, and it used to be just a motel, but now it's a Zen motel. So I was feeling kind of like I wanted to make a little bit of trouble, so I went inside there, and I said to the clerk at the desk, do you know who Suzuki was? And she said, yes. Well, that's very interesting, because she's not a practicer, and she's not a Zenny like we are, and yet she knew. So Suzuki, he said, we should be like milk and water, since we're best friends from past lives. Why? Look at this. Milk and water, it blends completely. There's no space between it. You know, the milk and the water completely join. You know, there's no separation. It's not me and you. It's not milk and water. It's this.
Do I have to drink that?
You're darn tootin', you do.
Nope, stretcher. No way, friendship's like that.
Friendship is like that, that's right. We have to take care of that, take care of each other like that.
It kind of stretches us and also makes us... we get to do more when you do stuff with friends.
Yeah.
And in that friendship, it seems like connecting is helpful.
Yeah. And to, you know, bearing in mind about how this is, like especially the relation between teacher and student, or teacher and teacher, student and student, you know, we have to take care of this because, you know, we're just human beings. You know, we have negative emotions that are going to come up in things. And what if I insult you sometime? Well, then what are you going to do?
there are lots of responses.
Yes. Well, one of the things that I've been thinking about is, you know, water. It benefits everything. And, you know, you just think about water in your life. And, you know, we're saying, I said at the beginning of this session that I hope that everybody who will be able to leave here with a sense of reverence for water. You know, and this is something that we spread around in our world. We connect with people through their water. You know, we connect with pile. You know, we make something special happen with it, and it can wake you up, in a way. Here's an example about what water can do. My wife, we used to manage a big ranch over on Mount Hamilton, and our nearest neighbors were like 5 miles away. So we had a small cabin, and then there was a flat place out in front of it. And my wife liked to sit out there and read books. She has passed away now, and, you know, but she's always here in my heart. And I call, and I have a nice picture of her next to my bed, and so I can look at her and you know, and say, tell her about things that have been happening with me today, or telling me about people that I have met, you know, or, you know, just how I've been feeling about things. But one day, as I looked at her picture this morning, I remembered something. She would like to sit on a chair overlooking this little creek below our cabin, and our cat would sit. We had a little cat, you know, a nice cat named Fierce. And Fierce was very fierce because she liked to chase deer. Little cat chased big deer. So one day Tina was sitting outside in her chair and just reading her book. I think it was about a Navajo policeman who had, you know, various adventures. Jim Chi is his name. And lots of good stories about Navajos and about shamans. Shamans, you know, shamans, we are all in a deep way. Shaman, what it means is we can enter into the life of other people, of other beings, of other jars and trees and our friends, and feel their world. It makes us be very, very vulnerable. So my wife is sitting out there reading her book, and the cat is right next to her, looking around. And then she hears this sound. And she looks down, and about, you know, maybe from here to the altar, from me to the altar here, there's a mountain lion. And it's down on all fours, and it's, you know, just like, you know, we do when we're going to do a push-up all the way down, and it's licking up the water like this. And she felt this, you know, when I came back from where I was doing, I was out riding that day, I think, that we'd had some, I had to manage the ranch in terms of I had a grazing lease out to some folks, and they had their cows out there, and then some city people came and let go their dogs, and the dogs were, you know, eventually they had to get shot because they were, you know, maiming, hamstringing the young cows. And so I was out, you know, looking for where these wild dogs were. And I came back, and she was just so excited by hearing the sound of water being lapped up by a lion. You know, it's just like the same sound of a little kitty cat licking up water, except it's much bigger. So, but mountain lions like water too. Water's an interesting thing. You know, I've been thinking about, you know, what are the qualities of the enlightened state? You know, how can we think about them in terms of water? Well, you know, like if you're a Muslim, you know, you can read about, there's a very beautiful treatise on, you know, all of the qualities of the enlightened state, and it's called The 100 Most Beautiful Names of Allah. You could say The 100 Most Beautiful Names of Victoria, or The 100 Most Beautiful Names of the Buddha. You know, all of these things you could say. You know, but it reflects upon qualities. You know, what are the qualities that allow us to get along with other people? Well, how does water do it? How does water get along with other people? Well, as I was going down to visit, to help my friend Surjit this morning, I started thinking, I wrote down, water doesn't wait, but it is used to waiting. It doesn't hesitate, it just flows. And you only get to know it by staying alone with it. Human will, human effort won't do it. You know, you have to have nothing in front of your eyes to be able to see this pure, pure, pure. You know, so this is what we're trying to do. We're looking into where is the source of water. Zen is about manifesting our divine source, yours and mine, everything's, all the source, everywhere the water goes. When we start to connect with our original nature, the source of this water, everything changes somehow. You know, it's like, do you find that your day goes more smoothly if you've sat first? If you get up in the morning and you spend a few minutes just sitting like that, and you find... One time I was over at Canando, where Les Kay is the teacher there, the abbot. And he came in, and he was about to give a Dharma talk, and he looked kind of flustered. And we bowed to each other, and I said, Les, you haven't sat today, have you? You know, and he said, no, I forgot. And you know, he's going to give a Dharma talk, and you know, and he sometimes you don't see it. Sometimes you can say to me, I can say to you, we can all talk to each other like this. You know, if we see something happening with each other that maybe we could, you know, help like that. You know, just, you know, say something like that. You know, I don't know. I wasn't planning to say it. You know, Les is, you know, he's has been sitting much longer than I have, and is a good teacher, my friend. You know, Coben was like water, in the sense that he everybody was his friend. He didn't want to be called Roshi. He didn't want a title like that. He said, just call me Coben. You know, so it's a, you know, we're you know, even a little thing like this is kind of breaking down separations that might exist. There's not actually any separation between us, so we're actually breaking down something which isn't even there in the first place, that is to say, illusion.
Might be an illusion, but you can go into a circumstance and feel when into a where there's a mental structure among people and go in and blow it, you know, and feel how uncomfortable it is.
Yes.
So there is, even though it's an illusion, there is substance to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's the notions we have about it are
yes.
illusory.
Yes.
And so be careful to examine it. So it's
look closely.
More closely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That, you know, this sutra that we've been chanting in the morning here is one of my favorite sutras, and it's a group of about half a dozen sutras that the Buddha spoke. And, you know, when he was developing this theme of the better way to live alone, and the first of the series that he gave is recorded in the Theranamo Sutra. You can look it up. And the story is that one of Buddha's disciples came to him one day, bowed to him, took a step back respectfully, and sat down to one side. And that was the standard kind of greeting when you came to see the Buddha like that. You know, you bowed, you stepped back, you went down and sat to the side. And then you address the Buddha with a question. And this monk came to the Buddha, and he said, he talked about this person whose name was Thera. Thera is also the Sanskrit word for elder. You know, so this monk, the sutra doesn't say whether he was old or young or anything, but it says that the monk came to the Buddha and said that, and brought up the case of this monk Thera, and said that, you know, the monk Thera was like, he wouldn't mix with the other students, like, you know, she was like oil and water, you know, he wouldn't mix. And so the other disciples of the Buddha felt there was something strange about this, and so they brought it up to the Buddha, and the Buddha said, please go to the monk Thera and ask him to come and see me. So the monk Thera came and sat down by the Buddha, and the Buddha said, I understand that you like to live alone. Is this true? And the monk Thera said, yes, beloved. Let's see, what did he say? What did he call the Buddha? Oh, he called the Buddha Blessed One this time. He said, yes, Blessed One, that is how I like to live. And then the Buddha questioned him, and he said, how can you tell me what it is about living alone that you like? And the monk Thera said, I live alone, I sleep alone, I go to the village to beg for food alone, I return to my sitting place in the forest, and I practice meditation alone. That is all. And the Buddha said, he was very kind, he said, I do not want to deny that you like to live alone, but I want to tell you that there is a better way to live alone. And this is on that occasion he recited this what is this sutra here. You know, do not pursue the past. When you're living alone, you know, you can never find peace if you are pursuing the past. You know, you're, you know, someone insulted me and I didn't like it. I wanted to beat the shit out of him. Something happened that I didn't like, and you know, that's pursuing the past. You can look at the past in order to see it better. That's different than pursuing the past, just being stuck in the past or being stuck in the future. But the Buddha recited this sutra to the monk Thera, And the monk Sthira bowed respectfully and returned to his place and began to sit in meditation. And that was the occasion for presenting this thing. You know, it's, you know, not, do not pursue the past. Do not lose yourself in the future. The past no longer is. The future has not yet come. Looking deeply at life as it is in the very here and now. What is in the very here and now? Sacred water. It's right here all the time. And if you remain in contact with that, then you will find that you are able to mix with everyone. You're able to be friends and gentle with everyone. You know, it's something, I don't know, this is something that I work on myself. You know, one of the most important things to me is to be able to be to listen with a kind ear, something like that. You know, I think I value being able to be not like oil and water. You know, that doesn't mean that I can't live the kind of lifestyle that I do. You know, I like to be alone. I like to sit alone. You know, I like to, you know, have strange hours and practice in the middle of the night. And I like to walk in the forest by myself at night. And I like to tease gorillas. You know, every day when I went to wake up Coco, you know, there's a window in her yard, and it had a shutter on it, so I would open it up, and right outside the window I would put a glass of water, and she, the straw that she liked was a piece of clear plastic about this long, and it had, and you know, you had to kind of go on it, me to be able to drink from her water, and you know, I would put two straws into her glass of water, and I would put one of them in through the window for her, and I put one outside the window for me, and then we'd look. Then it would mean that we were, our faces are, you know, like 10 inches apart or so, like this, and so we both drink at the same time like this, and Coco on one time. See, you can even be naughty with water, because Coco, she took up her straw and blew it at me, full of water. So I got a wet face. You know, so it's a, you know, if I did it to somebody who I didn't like, if somebody I didn't like did that to me, well, I might have a different kind of feeling. But I liked Coco, and Coco liked me, so we could play jokes on each other like this. Water. Connect. Just think, I mean, I'm just thinking about all the different interesting things about water that we think about in our lives. Like, in Cantonese, the word for the water that comes out of your nose is called bei si. And I guess I'm feeling a little bit felonious today. and the reason is that you know, like Coleman, you know, like he was one of the most felonious people I've ever met. He would start out with his cute little daughter Yoshiko when she was like 2 years old or so, like that. You know, and he would, he taught her this wonderful thing. And he taught her how to pick her nose and eat it and then rub her tummy and say, yum. And you know, if you go up to a little girl like this and he's just taught, your teacher has just taught his own little girl, Yoshiko, you know, how to do this, you know, what can you say? I mean, this is dynamite. You know, you have to go wild in your teaching. You know, you have to be really innovative when you're doing things in your life. You know, you don't want to be mundane. Mundane's the worst thing that you can possibly happen. You know, it's the most stultifying thing in our practice is to make it mundane, to make it stuck in just doing the rituals. You know, just like, you know, we're supposed to be keeping the Buddha's lamp alive. You know, we're supposed to be embodying his way, this wonderful thing. I mean, there are more Buddhists in the world than any other religion in the world, I have heard. Things like that you can find out on the internet. Since I don't have the internet, I have to hear it from other people. So today it was kind of interesting when we went out, and I thought we could just get down to Slate Creek over there and go play around in the water for a while, but then it seemed like the path that went down there was overgrown and I couldn't find another way to get down. You know, it's very steep-sided there. That's the only way to get down in there. So we had to just kind of wander into the forest. But after we stopped looking for a way down into Slate Creek, suddenly everybody connected with nature. I mean, it was just like, I mean, it was almost like a palpable thing you could feel. I mean, we went down to this one, we went past through this locked gate, you know, it says the area, it says closed, no public entry until made safe for public. And, you know, so we went down there. And then we went further down. We were looking for this road that I knew that went down to Slate Creek, and we couldn't find it. But then after we gave up trying to find Smith Creek, and we all decided together that we would continue on down that forest road, we went down. And then I was a little bit, just kind of suddenly, the feeling of everybody just changed. It felt like we were going someplace, and then suddenly we're not going someplace, and then suddenly we're here. And it was really a remarkable thing. Did you feel that too, Chris, at that moment there? It just felt like, did you feel that too, Cheryl? You know, there was a very moment there.
Yeah. It was like, we were just on a journey.
We were just on a journey.
To nowhere.
To nowhere.
Fast.
And I guess that's kind of a nice thing about, you know, on a journey to nowhere fast, you know, like in our practice, you know, if you're trying to think about what is liberation, what is enlightenment, what is nothing more than this, you can't go any farther than this, what is it? You know, how do we talk about it? How do we think about it? How do we practice about it? Well, there's the teaching that I mentioned yesterday about the three doors of liberation. What are the three doors? Wishlessness, aimlessness, and signlessness. So you go out in the forest and you don't think about going to Slate Creek. I am Slate Creek. I am Slate Creek. And the reason why I call myself this is that I think of our own internal landscape, what our mind is like. It's just like these mountains. You know, there's steep places, there's grassy fields with deer in them, you know, there's big trees sticking high up. There's creeks like Slate Creek that go down. But you know what? If you know, there are places in all of our minds which have the possibility of our ruination. And we're going to go through these. And so I think of it for myself as being that I am Slate Creek. I can flow down Slate Creek Canyon there. It's a beautiful canyon all the way down. But down a ways down, it's very rugged down in there, there's a 32-foot waterfall. So here I am. I am Slate Creek. I'm walking and traveling down through this nice canyon, and suddenly I come to this 32-foot waterfall, and I go over the edge, and I get dashed to pieces on the rocks below. You know, my spray goes all over everything, my blood all over everything. And there's this great big pool at the bottom. And the last time that I had I was missing my wife so terribly one day, and I guess I have been having a hard time with missing my wife, but it comes and goes, you know. One day, the reason why I took the name of Slate Creek is that now I know that I am going to go down this canyon, and that there's a part of my mind where I'm going to go over a 32-foot waterfall, and I'm going to be blood splattered all over the rocks down below, and I'm going to nourish all the green mosses down there. But I know about this place, this water. I am this water, you know. And so, and I know, and I get down to this pool at the bottom. The most remarkable thing, you know, when you get into these really deep trance states, when you're so, you know, when everything in your world is just completely, it doesn't make any sense. You know, you can touch your clothes, you know, and you're touching something that's, you know, it doesn't, it's just nothing is like it seems. It's just you. You go into this place, but I know that when I go over that falls, and I will go over that falls again in my life, you know, and I know, but when I get down there in the falls, the last time I went over them, in the pool at the bottom, there were three beautiful salmon with these beautiful eyes, and they just poured out of here, these eyes of these salmon at me, and, you know, and I just, you know, it wasn't like I was any less devastated. It's just that all that love was waiting for me, and it sustained me. And we have to find these places in our, you know, when we can be like water, when we can think like water. You know, water, it has all these different things that it is. You know, if you put a dish of water outside and it evaporates and it goes into the air, where does it go? I don't know where it goes. And you know, and it drifts. So one time I was doing a very interesting study in Montana, There's a place in Montana called Grasshopper Glacier. And you know in the Bible how they talk about how there used to be tremendous plagues of locusts that would just devastate whole countries? Well, when the American West was first getting settled, there was an American locust. It's extinct now because its habitat on the east side of the Rockies was destroyed by farming. And in this glacier, so I was going into the glacier and watching where the glacier had broken off, and I found how these locusts were embedded in the glacier. And then you can date them, radiocarbon date them, how many, back thousands and tens and 20,000 years. The locusts that had their big swarms, and some of them fell into the glacier and were embedded in the glacier. But in the cores of the glacier, talking about water, how it disappears into the atmosphere like this, there are oak trees. All these oak trees around here are pollinated by the wind. The wind comes and hits the catkins, and the pollen gets carried away, and it goes up over the mountains like this, and it goes up high into the atmosphere, and it goes over the Sierras, and some of it falls down on Grasshopper Glacier in Montana. And, some of that, so that if the pollen is being carried this far away, then water vapor must be carried this far away too. We've got a prevailing easterly winds here. And I mean, just thinking about water. I mean, just thinking about how water goes and how it's everywhere. It's like smoke. We used to play a game, children and I. We'd light a stick of incense before we had a service, and we'd say, "This smoke goes everywhere." And you'd say it to the children, and they would look at the smoke and they watch it going around and then finally just disappearing like this. And it's just, like our practice is about finding magic. It's magic. The Shakyamuni Buddha talked about magic, not some, fancy trippy kind of thing like, eating one grain of rice a day and living forever, but he was very practical about things. He told us, how to live and how not to live. He told us how to be like water and how not to be like water. And so I think it's how does water behave? Does water do this or does water do that? We can think about, water as a practice. Are you afraid of water? Are you afraid of, many people I find are afraid of, they may not know how to swim. There was a time when, at Stanford, there's this Felt Lake is their emergency water supply, and you're not supposed to go in there, but it's the best pond to swim in ever. And so it's 3/8 of a mile over and 3/8 of a mile back, so you get a really nice long swim. But water is precious, and sometimes in the winter when there's a fish ladder on Los Trancos Creek just upstream from Felt Lake, and in the wintertime when the flows are very high, they open it up. And the steelhead get through, and the steelhead also come down into Felt Lake. And sometimes if you're fishing illegally in Felt Lake, you might catch a steelhead. Oh, Mark, hi. Welcome.
Well, water and oil don't mix.
They don't.
And you live up where the owls howl at night.
Yep.
And not by a car wash, a 24-hour car wash,
or it's true.
A brake shop.
True.
And there are other... So what do? If that's where you live, how do you...
Wash your car?
You wash your car? Yeah, also, there are different kinds of people, and mm-hmm. some people don't mix well with others.
This is true.
And so basmati vinegar and oil goes together in a salad, so there are times where these two different fluids work out well together.
It is delicious.
And so maybe that's the idea, is to...
They don't ever mix.
Huh?
They don't mix. It's an emulsion, they don't mix. Well, vinegar and oil and water don't mix.
But they taste good.
I know they taste good, but they don't mix.
I'm just saying that you can at least get some mutual benefit out of both of them in a salad.
Yeah. Right, do it.
And so, just carrying this water, oil, metaphor into interpersonal relations and the connections with people. You talk about two friends coming together and blending. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's parts that do and other parts that don't. And maybe that's part of what you talk about in being kind to everyone, or that there is, there probably are some things that these people could push your buttons.
Mm-hmm. There are. So I have to know what that is.
So know the boundaries.
Know the boundaries, yeah. I called up one of my old colleagues at Open Space the other day when I was thinking about this Dharma talk today, and I said that I was planning on bringing the concept of water into my Dharma talk. And I said, do you have any interesting thing to tell me to remind me about our time doing field work together about water? And she said, oh, yes. One time in the Sierra Azul, you know, which is the part of the Santa Cruz Mountains on the other side of Highway 17, we were studying Herbert Creek, which is a real good trout stream, and there was a lady who lived up there, and she
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.